The York Review's Rough Draft Shorts podcast is a glance at York College's developing literary and artistic community. Here's your host, Ryan Emmert.
We were able to contact Tori Azzaro and talk with her about her Child of the World film photography portfolio. In January of 2016, she took a trip over to India. She worked with orphans at a place called Hoina, which stands for Homes of the Indian Nation. She took a plethora of photographs, hundreds of photographs, of which she selected 20 to craft, this amazing black and white film photography portfolio, and just a beautiful representation of the things she did while she was over there. And it's available for viewing on our website. You should check it out. I think it complements the interview. That's all I really need to say. I think it speaks for itself. Let's hear it out. So tell me a little bit about yourself. How long have you been shooting photography or just any sort of visual art? How long have you been involved with that?
I started digital photography in middle school, and it kind of, it felt right, the right medium, but just there was a missing piece involved and I couldn't figure it out. And then when I started my freshman year of high school was when I kind of learned about film photography and the darkroom. And actually, my high school teacher was really against darkroom, so she didn't want us to really work in the darkroom, and that's, we just kind of did a lot of textbook work.
Yeah.
And my sophomore year, I switched teachers, and we both single-handedly reopened my high school's darkroom.
That's cool.
It kind of was like my own personal darkroom, because nobody else in my school knew how to use any of the chemicals or any of that.
Nobody used to photography at the time.
Right, so it was nice, and that's kind of where my film photography started, but I did start digital at a young age and did the switch in high school to film.
Yeah, it sounds like you really just kind of delved into the practice of it with just totally reconstructing a darkroom.
Yeah.
So I'm going to assume that's why you sort of veer towards film photography. You mentioned something felt like it's missing in digital photography, so like, let's just say, I guess the development of the photos itself is what maybe where you feel like this is art.
Yeah, I kind of like the feel of film more. I like the grain, the oldness that it brings. It's almost vintagey,
right,
for lack of better terms. But
right.
I definitely think that darkroom is an art in itself, and I really enjoyed the fact that I could totally create my images from beginning till end, hands on.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, digital, you snap it and pull it up on a computer, and you can manipulate it in Facebook, Photoshop, and that's kind of different. But I liked being able to actually sit in the dark room and like see my art come alive.
Right, right. And that actually reminds me just of a sort of an old idiom or statement that they say in the art world, that like, constrictions and constraints are sort of like what feeds, artistry. So that like when you're told you can't do something and you need to change, you need to adjust something, and there are very particular sort of circumstances,
mm-hmm,
behind creating the work, that's when you make the best art.
Yeah.
Which is maybe why photography is looked at very differently in the digital genre. We're going to talk about this in the podcast, in fact. Just sort of discussing like the digital print publication, or the digital publication versus the print publication.
Okay.
Let me try that. The digital publication versus the print publication, and how the York Review itself has always been a print publication, whereas now we're trying to, expand into more digital genres. So you recently returned from India, where you, what did you do over there, in fact?
I lived there for a month, and I worked with orphans. I went with a program with a school, and we did service learning internationally. So we lived at an orphanage and,
mm-hmm,
kind of did some, hands-on help there. But we also did some day trips where we helped, feed the hungry,
mm-hmm,
and just a bunch of different stuff, but mainly was focused on the orphans.
Right. And over there you found a lot of inspiration. So you did collect a number of photographs and come back and develop them. I have taken a look at them, very beautiful photographs.
Thank you.
Do you think there's a future with that sort of project? Maybe not necessarily with those photos as a whole, but maybe just traveling, doing that sort of charitable work. Do you think you have a future sort of in that field?
I definitely would like to travel somewhere. What kind of sparked me doing this series, it's called Child of the World, is just the culture was so drastically different than what I was used to. So I felt like it was such a good contrast to what everyone else was seeing back here. So I only took film photos the entire time I was there, which a lot of people thought was insane.
Right.
But I took hundreds.
You had the immediate return.
Right. I had not that instant satisfaction, but I had hundreds and hundreds, and I developed all the negatives, you know, by hand myself. But now I definitely would like to travel. I want to get back to India at some point, simply because I miss the orphans a lot. But I do want to travel more in places that are so drastically different and just kind of immerse myself in that.
Yeah, definitely. And it seems like a great experience. The photographs and just the subjects in the photographs just completely astonished me. Tell me a little bit about some of your favorite photographs, actually, in the set. I know you had the one of the three little girls.
Yeah.
You can tell me about that one. Or there was also the, I think it was the mental health facility or something where there was
Yeah. So one of my all-time favorites is titled Sandia, and it's three orphans, that girls that I worked with at the orphanage, and they're, you know, standing around the swing, and I really enjoy it because me personally knowing these girls, just, you know, the picture speaks volumes of how they are and their personality.
Right.
And so
just some of your content without any sort of composition behind it.
Right. And so when I just hang it up, and I, you know, I have actually a copy of it hanging in my room because when, you know, when I miss them, I look at it and I'm like, you know, there they are in, you know, picture form, and it just totally shows their personality. And I think that, you know, a lot of people have said to me, you know, I just can tell just looking at them the kind of kids they are and, you know, what they're like. And it just, it's one of my favorites. And I titled it Sandia because one of the girls in the picture is named Sandia, and I became very, very close with her. And so it's kind of like a, you know, an ode to her.
Mm-hmm.
I also really enjoy a photo called Leper, and we visited a leprosy colony, and I wasn't allowed to take pictures the whole time because, you know, these people have been through hell and back and, you know, are missing body parts and just sick. And so I felt, I felt it was right not to take pictures. We weren't allowed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm not going to overstep that boundary. It's, you know, personal. But as we're leaving, the older man in the picture, his son actually pulled me aside because he saw my camera hanging around my neck.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, can you please take a picture of my dad just so people see him?
Right.
And that really was like moving to me.
Yeah,
I was
that's
like,
incredible.
So I picked my camera up, I took a picture, and as soon as I walked away, I was like, that's going to turn out so good. I just felt like it was meant to be.
There's so much meaning behind the content of those photos. I'm thinking here, like, if I'm in that position, I mean, the last thing I'm thinking is sort of the composition of these photos.
Yeah.
It's really just like you're in that moment, and just that mere fact just gives them value.
Right.
And like I think the picture of the dog that you had taken, so very sad. The dog has recently passed.
Yeah.
And it makes you think like that, the value of that photo, it goes up incredibly, incredibly high. And the mere fact that was probably one photo of that dog taken.
Right.
So many people in that community probably love that animal. I don't know, if they were given the chance to, I think, see the photo.
Yeah.
They would have such a connection to it. That just goes to speak about what, just even what something as simple as photography can do.
Yeah, and I also, something I pride myself on with the Child of the World series is I didn't sit down and pose anybody. It wasn't like in a studio setting where you sit down and put this person there and whatever.
Right.
None of it was pose. It was just merely whatever was going on in that moment, and whatever I was seeing, I just would pick my camera up and click, and that was it.
And it's incredible.
So
you sift through the photos, and just it seems like everybody is just smiling, And they're just always like that.
Yeah.
And it speaks volumes about their culture. Just the way they carry themselves.
Yeah.
Especially around people that aren't necessarily native.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely very interesting stuff. I'm just going to sort of move the discussion over to, so we're going to speak still, of course, about the India Project, because I think that definitely encapsulates you as a photographer. How do you sort of define successes with these photographs? Like, what made you think when you came back and you saw these photographs, you were like, these are the ones, or maybe not necessarily these, but any sort of photograph, when you get it and you have it developed and it's done, what makes you say, like, this is a successful photograph?
I think in relation to the India pictures, I picked the pictures that were so deeply personal to me, mm-hmm. to process first.
Mm-hmm.
So the three girls that, right. I was talking about, it's titled Sandhya, I did that one very first as soon as I came back in January. And I think it's successful to me when I look at it and I can feel exactly what I was feeling the moment I took that picture.
Right. And I feel like anybody, if they're sitting there viewing that picture, if they can feel sort of what the photographer was feeling in that moment, then there. And yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. Behind sharing your work, in fact, since you do seem to take a lot of pride in these photos, how have you been going about sort of sharing them with the world around you?
That's a good question. So when I came back and I started to work on my series, I decided that it was such a big body of work and I wanted to keep it together. Mm-hmm. So
how many photos did you have exactly?
It's 20. This series is 20.
Just a selection of ones you took?
Yeah.
So you had a lot more?
Yeah.
And just sort of skimmed
hundreds.
It down? Yeah, I bet. I would have gone through many rolls of film there. Yeah.
When I was younger, I would, submit two or three pictures to art shows,
right.
juried art shows, mm-hmm. and such. And this series, as I was working through it, I was like, I feel like that just doesn't do it justice, just doing three. I feel like it is a body of work that is strong together.
Yeah.
But also, it shows the people that I cared about the most during this trip, and mm-hmm. I wanted to kind of honor them. So I titled it Child of the World because I felt like that symbolized the kids to me.
Right.
And I decided to start the process to have my own independent art show, which mm-hmm. it was my first, so it was
That's scary, awesome. But really exciting.
And I talked to this place in my hometown called The Palette and the Page,
mm-hmm.
and they were totally on board.
Is that
really
sort of like an artist's sort of a green room in a sense? They just art, show art, work with artists.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. So I started there and I bought really nice gallery frames,
yeah.
and I made it about the kids. I got in contact with the Pennsylvania branch of the orphanage called Hoena,
mm-hmm.
and got some paperwork,
awesome.
Got how to donate, how to sponsor,
mm-hmm.
and I really advertised it more towards the kids. I talked to local newspapers, local magazines in Maryland, and kind of got the ball rolling. So that's kind of mm-hmm. where it started. So when I came back to York, I decided, there's a lot of people here that ask me about my trip and my art, and I decided I want to start working towards having an art show here. So currently I'm, tying up some loose ends with possibly having another art show to show the entire body and, just talking to, York Review,
right.
York College
Magazine.
Just
reaching out to organizations.
Reaching out, it's not always me reaching out. It's sometimes, people hear about it
mm-hmm.
and reach out to me. And
mm-hmm.
it's really awesome because I like having the opportunity to show what my trip was and give these people and these kids the recognition they deserve and also, raise awareness of the orphanage I worked at. So
yeah. It seems a perfect way to sort of bridge the gap between just the personal and the communal sort of art
right.
worlds. You go, you take your trip, it means very, very much to you. You come back, you share it, and all of a sudden, people have just very similar feelings.
Right.
Sort of gather a lot of knowledge just about the things that are going on outside of where we live. And I know you were a bit hesitant to share your work with us originally, and I sort of just want to discuss this because, I mean, us as younger artists, we do feel that way sometimes. Even with submissions to the York Review, sometimes hard to foster. People do a lot of art, but for some reason they tell themselves, you know, I don't think this is good enough. And it's not a matter of, like, thinking you suck. I think it's more so, like, it's, like, not finished. Yeah. Just, like, you know, it just feels incomplete, so you don't want to share it before it's in its final form. Do you think that's sort of what gives you a hesitancy, or do you think it's something else, maybe?
I think my hesitancy came from the fact that I think the series, in my opinion, is very personal, and, you know, with the art show, I had the opportunity to answer questions mm-hmm. and tell the stories that I wanted to tell about the specific pieces, and I feel like sometimes, you know, yeah, I could type up whole pieces to go along with each picture, but I right. feel like, for the most part, I like sharing them in a live setting so mm-hmm. that I can tell the spoken word part of each right. piece, and I feel like sometimes in paper that kind of gets lost.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I was going to say, you said live setting, which is another interesting thing that the Rough Draft podcast would like to experiment with. Right now, we are available online. However, we would like to throw a live podcast just because just having that sort of interaction with the person who makes the thing just for some reason conflates the sort of the idealism we have towards the art. You know, you hear a beautiful song on the radio, and then you look up the artist, and you suddenly may have a connection with that artist, or vice versa, you know, something yeah. similar. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Just seeing it more human.
Exactly. To see this body of work, and to see the person who completed it stand in front of it, and, you know, not necessarily have positions on it, but just be able to stand there and talk about it, and explore it with other people. People have questions, they may have answers, mm-hmm. But regardless, it's all sort of knowledge and experience that we're just sharing with one another. So yes, this has been a lovely interview. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for the York Review's Rough Draft Shorts podcast. The production of the program is by members of the York Review. Jeffrey Schiffman serves as technical director and editor of the podcast. Program is also available for download from the York Review website or at wvyc.podbean.com. We hope you'll join us again for another presentation of the York Review's Rough Draft podcast on the Voice of York College, WVYC.